Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here today as we talk about financial matters, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays helping people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you've got an advisor now or you're doing things on your own, whatever the case may be, we hope you consider this program another place for great information.
And a second opinion. And if you're someone's telling you about the greatest investment that was ever created, it's probably not. But call us and
questions. I have had, in my profession, our profession, oftentimes acquaintances will ask us for investment advice.
Or to invest in a...
Yeah, that happens. That still happens. But the... I haven't had it as much lately.
No?
And maybe it's because the markets feel so calm.
Or you have less friends.
Well, there's that too.
Or a combination of both. I'm going to give it a combination of both. But we oftentimes get asked, I know I do, and we've talked about it in the past, Scott, where someone will come and say, hey, I've got this great thing that I want you to invest in. And I've seen movie studios.
Oh, we've seen it.
Every type of technology you can imagine, apps.
Well, the first kind of smell test on an investment is, can you get into it easy and can you get out of it easy? I shouldn't have said the first part because they're all easy to get into.
Yes.
How quickly can you turn this thing into cash?
Who's the people that are managing the company?
Before that, how does it get turned into cash? And if it's not liquid, if you can't turn this thing into cash tomorrow, then for 99% of the people, don't invest.
You shouldn't do it. And if someone comes to you and wants you to put your life savings into a small company, don't do it unless you're prepared to actually go to work at the company or run the company. And then what brings it up is I had a client recently come to me and say, I want to invest in this business. My friend's going to run it, but it's going to be my money. And what do you think? And I said, well, I first of all, I don't think it's appropriate because it's too much
of a brand new business.
They were going to buy a business, so it was new to them. Okay. Uh-huh. I didn't think it was appropriate because it was too much of a percentage of their net worth going into a single company. And the second thing I said, so when your friend quits running that business, are you prepared to run the business? And they said,
what do you mean?
What do you mean? I said, and so fortunately they didn't do it. Recently ran into a friend that invested in a restaurant. He had a successful business on his own, not in the restaurant business, invested in a restaurant with the same concept of, hey, my friend's going to run it. And anyway, fortunately for him, when his friend left, he was able to sell, to assign his lease to another company without losing a ton of money, because if you're going to invest in a small business and any significant amount of money or net worth, your net worth, be prepared to run
it. Anyway, we are Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We are here every week to take your calls, answer your questions, and talk about other financial matters. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to take your call to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Our contact number is 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, that's 888-242-6766. And we're starting in the Bay Area with Nancy. Nancy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you?
We're wonderful. How are you, Nancy?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for having me on, and I've been listening to your podcasts and enjoying those.
So well, thank you.
Making those available.
What can we do for you?
All right. Well, I have a couple questions if we have time, but I'll start with just one, which is I have been doing sort of a diversified retirement portfolio, and I was just got on disability, which I didn't expect. So I'm now gone from being somebody who was a saver to somebody who's no longer going to be a saver. And so I'm trying to adjust my allocations, increase the bond portion. I've got it just under 30, so as opposed to stocks versus bonds.
So you're sub 30% on the bonds. Is that what you said?
Just a little under 30% right now, but most of that is in short duration, about 15%, about 5% in a money market, and about another 10% is in international stocks because we're in this rising interest rate thing. And these are just index funds.
Yeah, run through that again because I missed it. You said the third holding was international.
Stocks or bonds?
Bonds. Okay. I probably said stocks, but I meant bonds.
Okay. And how old are you?
57.
And are you on Social Security disability?
I just got awarded it. Yeah.
Okay. And are these dollars in an IRA or outside of an IRA or in a 401k or outside of 401k?
The bonds are in a, it's, you know, rollover 401k. That's where it is.
All right.
And the stocks are outside of a retirement account
or inside?
No, some of the stocks are in and some are out. I've about 43% of my holdings are outside retirement accounts. Okay. And that is all in stock indexes.
Yeah. Okay. And then 57% is in IRAs. This is because you have a couple. I know you asked us for a specific question, but there's a couple things going on in your situation that we want to address. And allocation and tax wise.
It sounds like you were working and disability forced you into early retirement. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And what's
that?
Like, oh my gosh, I have to pay more attention to bonds and I have to like be more, a less risk taking in my, mix because
maybe
I'm okay.
And where you take that income from. So what's the size of the brokerage account or the non IRA? What's the dollar amount there?
It's currently about $860,000.
And then, the IRA side is north of a million. Approximately how much is it?
Well, together, their retirement and regular accounts add up to about $2 million.
Okay. And how much income are you going to take off of this?
I haven't quite figured that out yet. I'm trying to continue to work part-time while I'm on disability to sort of, so it won't, it may not be a whole lot.
Like $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year?
I would say it might be less than that unless I did, decide to, I just bought the new car, so hopefully there won't be any more big unexpected expenses.
And is your home paid for?
No, it's I owe $200,000 on it, and that was going to be my second question because I listened to the podcast about getting out of debt when you retire. But I'm also like I've been here 10 years, and I'm not sure, that this is where I'm going to spend the rest of my life. And if I was to sell it in this Bay Area marketplace, it probably would need a kitchen remodel. There's always there's all these questions about.
All right, Scott, you have a question for Nancy?
I was off the same ones you just asked. Oh. So think of it this way. It sounds like you've had a lot of success by owning equities over the long term. I'm assuming you rode the financial crisis and didn't make a lot of changes out of stocks during that time. Is that correct?
As far as I recall, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we tend to be more of a hoarding dry powder person and then going, oh, this was like a good time to get in, you know, so.
Yeah. And so so I think there's a couple challenges. One challenge, obviously, is you said it the first thing. I've been a saver my whole life, and now I'm going to have to change that. So I think part of it, it's just a psychological issue you're dealing with, is that you no longer have that income to continue to add to your savings. And now you're at a point where you might actually have to be drawing a bit from your savings.
And what was your income while you were working?
Oh, it varied.
Just give us an average.
I was self-employed, but I was always able to.
Was it $150,000 a year or $100,000 a year?
Yeah, some years it was that. Some years it was less, depending on what was going on.
So part of the problem, Scott, is I agree with Scott.
I mean, you've got about $200,000 in international bonds. And you have a $200,000 mortgage. If your home was paid off and I came to you and said, hey, Nancy, I got this great idea. Go take a $200,000 mortgage on your home. I know if you're not really no longer going to be there, but, and let's go put this in international bonds.
What would you say?
I should have to think about it.
All right. Well, I would say,
I don't really know.
I would say no. So here's the first thing I would do. The first thing I would do is just pay that mortgage off.
I would as well. You've
got the things in your portfolio that are yielding much less than the cost of your mortgage. And I don't care if your mortgage, what's the interest rate on your mortgage?
3%? 3.6, something like that.
Yeah. So you've got things in your portfolio that are yielding less than what you're paying on your mortgage.
And in your short-term bond.
That's intentional, right? Because what do they call it? The reason you have a diversified portfolio.
No, understand, so but
reduce but fluctuations, or whatever.
No, I understand why it's in the portfolio, right? And the reason to have it, the mortgage while you are working and the mortgage that you have while you're retired are two different things. So if you were sitting in my office, I'd say, okay, Nancy, and you said, Pat, I want you to manage this $2 million, which we do, you know, thousands of clients, we manage their money. The first thing I would do is say, well, I don't want to manage the whole $2 million, Nancy. I want you to pay off your mortgage. And the reason is that it's less risk in the portfolio, and over the long term, you're going to yield higher than what you're going to by paying that mortgage off at a 3.6% interest rate. Now, people are listening to me and they're going, you can't get better than 3.6. Yes, we can get better than 3.6. But the reality is right now, 30% of your portfolio, approximately a third of your portfolio is in instruments that are yielding less than 3.6%.
Yeah, that payment, if you don't have to worry about that payment, that's less money you need to have sitting in bonds. So I would argue that you would, by having whatever obligations you have each month, we need to make sure we have enough money in bonds to hold.
Can I finish my statement? Sorry. Go ahead.
So the reason, there's only two reasons you'd want to have bonds in your portfolio. One is if you want to reduce some of the risks of the swings of the stock market, because over the long term, one could certainly argue that you have a higher probability of earning higher returns by having money in equities over bonds. But the second, which is important to you, is that you want money outside of stocks that's going to provide the capital you're going to need to make your living expenses. So unless your Social Security income is enough to cover your mortgage payments and all of your living expenses, you need to have some money. The prudent thing to do is have some money outside of stocks. Okay, so whatever money you're paying into the mortgage paint your payment, I would argue that you at least need 5 years of that set aside, not tied to stock. So the concept of having the mortgage, and if you were still working, it'd be a different situation.
But you're not.
And my assumption is, our assumption here on this call is that you want to do the best thing with your portfolio to ensure that these dollars are going to last you and continue to have some growth the rest of your life. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. So, but just to add to this, the mortgage is like $900 something.
It's irrelevant.
And the property tax is like $6,000-something a year. So it's not
It's still irrelevant.
And then you lose the tax.
You're not getting it anymore anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That changed.
You're going to be the standard deduction.
Yeah, that changed. In fact, that's even more of an argument.
So we'll move past the mortgage because that's irrelevant.
What changed?
The tax law.
Yeah, but I'm under that $10,000, so I still get it.
No, because you're going to take a standard deduction unless you have huge charitable expenditures. You're going to be standard deduction going forward.
Yeah.
And even standard deduction doubled.
And even then, even if it was over, it's only the difference
Almost 90% of Americans are going to be standard deduction.
So that doesn't apply to you anymore. In fact,
I've never taken the standard deduction before. So you've been working.
Yeah.
So the argument, having the mortgage, if you could say $200,000, if you like a mortgage, why not have it $700,000?
Yeah, why wouldn't you borrow more money out of the home and invest it? Nancy, we don't have a dog in this fight, right? You called.
No, I see. Right? So I guess.
If you were my sister, I'd say, look, just pay the mortgage off, right? Pay the mortgage off and never worry about it again.
So then I don't have the cash to, like, let's step back for a minute.
What are you trying to accomplish right now with your dog? Unfortunately, it's a bit not what you've chosen, right? You're working, you're self-employed, successful, great saver. Suddenly you find yourself on disability, not able to work. That is a bummer, right? Fortunately, you've been a good saver, so you have financial assets. Our assumption is that you want to be as prudent as possible with those financial assets to ensure your standard of living until your dying day, whenever that might be.
Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. But one of my concerns about paying the mortgage off right now is that that means I am taking whatever, let's call it dry powder, cash reserves that I have, and then if I want to sell this house and move, then where am I going to raise the money to fix up this house? And, you know, like if I have to do a down payment on the other house, because this is the Bay Area, it's a very competitive housing market, blah, blah, blah. You know,
if you think that might be a possibility in the next 2 years, then don't pay it off. It's frankly not, in the overall scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And by the way, if you were going to sell your house now, you wouldn't remodel anything. You'd barely run a vacuum if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. I wouldn't even mow the front lawn.
I don't know.
All right. I'm just telling you.
I've lived in the Bay Area many years.
I'm just telling you.
I'm telling you.
You don't even have to run a vacuum. Anyway, so the answer to your question is, yes, the bond position of 30% of the portfolio is appropriate at this stage of the game.
So my underlying question was really, what do you do with that 30%? What do I do now because we're in a rising interest and rate environment? Or what do I do later when we're not? And like is index funds good or is there something else? Because I've just never thought about the bond portion before.
We may or may not be in a rising interest rate environment, right? So just because the Feds have raised rates in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen. So anything past a short-term rate, we start looking at a longer-term interest rates, is set by the bond market. And the bond market has been priced in for the majority of this year, the fact that we're not really in a rising interest rate environment. So it's anyone's guess.
What does that mean, priced in?
Well, what it means is that the short-term interest rates are determined by the Federal Reserve. Long-term interest rates are actually determined by the market and what the market is willing to pay to borrow money. So when you look at the yield curve, right, it's a relatively flat yield curve, which means that although short-term interest rates have actually gone up, long-term interest rates, there hasn't been a huge amount of movement relative to short-term interest rates. So the answer to the question is, what do you do? Other than the fact that she might be a little bit overweighted in international.
30% of her, a third of her bond, actually higher than that, 40% of her bond holdings are in international bonds, which I certainly would not have because you're exposing yourself to all this currency risk for no reason.
I was trying to say it nicely by saying that you're probably overweighted in international bonds and we don't know the maturity on those bonds. Quite frankly, Nancy, you need to dig into that and understand if you're going to own something in your portfolio, you need to understand why you own it and how it works.
Particularly if you're the one making the picks.
Bond funds. They're bond funds.
I understand what they are. I get what I understand what they are. So that it's an asset class. So
if you look at some of the types of different bonds you can have in your portfolio, you can have some obviously short term like you've got. You can have some that are a floating rate that adjust with interest rates. They're bank type loans. You can have those in your portfolio. You can have some that's actively managed in your portfolio where they go out a little more on the risk spectrum. I think you need to be careful in today's market of the high yield bonds.
Yeah, stay
because
away from
the
you can have some in the portfolio.
Spread, the spread's almost at a historical low. I mean, you got to go back to right before the financial crisis. The spread between investment grade and high yield are so tight.
So what that spread means is that the interest rate you're receiving for the risk isn't probably, you're not being 100% compensated for the risk that you're taking.
Yeah.
In some high yield bonds. But there's all kinds of different flavors of high-yield bonds. So just because it is an index bond or non-index bond doesn't make it good. In your portfolio, I'm very, very comfortable with 25 to 30% of the portfolio in the bond or cash markets. We believe that you're overweighted in international, so you need to actually lower that. And if you're worried about interest rate risk, then keep your maturity short.
Yeah. And
appreciate the call.
Yeah, and I think part of it is you need to have just as much diligence that would go into building an equity portfolio needs to go into the fixed income portfolio. And Nancy, we certainly wish you well.
But again, I would pay the mortgage off.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the call, Nancy. Wish you the very, very best. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Studies have shown that roughly 50% of us go into retirement earlier than we'd planned, right?
So, as evidenced by this phone call.
Nancy just called us here at Hanson McLean to ask us about some things. And she went into an early retirement.
Great saver.
And a great saver.
We're assuming she saved it. She may have inherited some of it, but good savers.
And we realized that we not everyone wants to retire. Right. So we talk to people. Yeah, I don't know. Anyone. But it's important to be in a position where retirement's a possibility.
Yes.
Because you never know what comes tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
But well, I can't tell you how often whether it's someone's own disability or
parents. Oftentimes people will quit their jobs to take care of their parents full time, or they will quit their job to take care of a spouse. It's not unusual at all. So normally it means early retirement.
Didn't we beat that thing here?
We did. We never got our argument into why you would do it and how people actually feel in retirement with the mortgage paid off.
You know, another thing, Pat, we were talking about the forced into retirement. The reason we are adamant, maybe adamant's a strong term, strongly encourage people to have their mortgage paid off in retirement is because we deal with thousands of retirees. At Hanson McLean, we've literally thousands of retirees. When the financial markets, when everything's going up and rosy, no one's worried about anything really, right?
And as we've seen in the overall economy, no one seems to worry about debt. People now have loaded up again on consumer debt. People have loaded up on mortgage debt, and the governments are just piling it on.
Retirees on mortgage debt is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
Right? But what if we look at, if someone's looking at their retirement, they're going to end up going through some more recessions. They're going to go through some more down financial markets. They're going to go through some times when things feel quite scary in the financial world.
And if your home is paid off in retirement, money not going out, is exactly the same as money coming in. And so that phone call we had with Nancy, we never got a chance to actually tell her why it was important. She was looking at it as 100% dollars.
Well, even from
that,
we
made the argument.
Even from that, unless you're earning more than you're paying.
On portions of your portfolio, which she was not. She had $100,000 in cash and she had $100,000. She had $200,000 in something that was paying less than...
Much less than the mortgage rate.
Probably
2%.
Yeah. But she wasn't going to hear
us. But further than that, when the stock market falls, and it will fall again, and it'll be some other painful times in the future, for those who don't have tremendous needs to draw money from their accounts...
Weather it so much better.
They just do, because for most people, the mortgage is their largest expense. And when that's gone, they're like, well, during the financial crisis, worst case, I've got my house. Yeah. I heard people say that. It's like, no, stick tight, stick with your investment plan. Things are going to recover. And the next time it comes down again, it's going to look ugly. You're going to be tempted to sell. And with those that are still having to make that monthly mortgage payment, it just makes it all the more difficult. Our concern is not, and we get paid to manage money, right?
Yes. So and we're telling people not to.
We could say, take out a big mortgage so we can manage the money. Doesn't seem to be the prudent thing to do. All right, we're taking a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue on with calls. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Yeah, glad you are with us. And it's funny, Pat and I were just chatting over the quick break here about, we're talking about some of the consumer debt that's been on the rise.
Significantly.
Yeah, and you were sharing about, you just noticed all the boat dealers and ATV dealers with all their...
just completely huge inventories. And I was driving the other day with a gentleman I work with. And I said to him, look at these dealerships. And then I started talking about flooring companies that would, you know, right at the Great Recession that would just show up. And a flooring company is they call them flooring
company. The Harvard
Floor? A flooring company
linoleum.
For a boat dealership or automobile dealership. They call them flooring companies, are the ones that finance the inventory on the floor. So if you go to a boat dealership and you're looking at a boat, oftentimes that boat you're looking at has actually been financed.
Yeah, because you're the boat dealer. It's a lot of capital. A
lot of capital. So during the recession, these companies would just show up and take 100% of people's inventories off the floor because they had been missing payments or they felt it was bad. But Scott and I were talking about it over the break, and then we were talking about, I know a gentleman who's a boat dealer, and he said that they make 15 and 20 year loans on a boat.
Most boats, these are like ski boats, right?
They're like really expensive, $150,000, $200,000 boats.
Those just your basic boat that you see people doing wakeboarding off and stuff. They're very expensive now.
With the huge speakers.
Boat prices have increased dramatically.
Huge speakers.
Sign of the...
of the times.
So huge speakers.
Huge speakers.
Financed 15 years. How long do you think those speakers are going to last?
I don't know, but... should you really be financing something for 15 years that is that much of a, it's not a need. It's probably barely a want for most people. I guess it has to be a want or you wouldn't finance it for 15 years. But here's a little bit of financial advice. Take it if you want. If you have to finance something that is a recreational vehicle for 15 years, there's probably a pretty good chance that you can't afford it and that you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
There's probably a pretty good chance. So,
and you might make the cash flow swing now,
but you should
really
be thinking.
What happens when you're 57 and get forced into early retirement, or, like a caller we had in the previous staff?
Yeah. So just be, again, careful with debt. Careful with consumer debt. Careful with
It's not that debt. There's clearly times when debt makes sense, but.
Yeah. But. Careful with government debt, municipality debt.
Our goal here at Hanson McLean is to help people get to a point in their life where they have some financial security, financial independence, work as an option, not an obligation.
And
when people get to that point.
Biggest impediment to that, Scott, when someone comes in and wants to retire.
Required payments, debt. It's the monthly obligations. When you're younger, it's kids, right? Mouths to feed. And as you go through life, if you end up at your end of your career and you have just as much debt as you had
when you're 25 or 30. Well,
and we certainly see it.
Yeah. It's the number one reason that people can't retire comfortably isn't lack of income. It's too much debt.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what drives people into bankruptcy, of course.
It's living beyond one's means.
Yeah. All right. 1-888-2. It's not like we're preachy now.
We are kind of.
I guess
we're pretty passionate, don't you? You're pretty passionate about it. I know I'm passionate about it.
Yeah, I've owned a boat for recreational boat for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
A little more than 20 years. By used.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't buy one.
You didn't finance it?
No.
You bought one when you could afford it.
They're very expensive toys.
Yes.
The insurance.
It stands for, by BOAT, boat, bring over another 1,000. That's what it means.
Yeah. That's what it means. It's just. All right. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Sacramento and talk with Chris. Chris, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Chris.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
My question, obviously, it's extremely important for someone, when you get to the end of your working life, but it involves the final goal, I guess, would be on Social Security, except the problem is right now I'm only age 53, and I have some major health issues, which I've got doctors supporting me that would like to put me out on state disability, and I have a law office that would like to help me apply for Social Security benefits.
Okay.
They claim that they could potentially get me benefits for retirement age of 67 right now at age 53.
Okay. So what's your question for us?
Well, my question is if I should actually take... If I should actually apply for the Social Security disability benefits, now after taking short-term disability, how that's going to, is the payment, is the payment going to be much lower? Is it going to hurt me down?
Let's step back for a second. Are you unemployed now because of your disability?
No, I am not.
Should you be?
Yes. And that's a grayer area because thank God for HIPAA, if my employer knew about my injuries, I would probably be terminated immediately. And I'm on a lot of medications, even medical implants, just to keep me going. Those issues alone are difficult.
Okay, and so why are you not on disability then?
Well,
I'm confused.
Because morally, I guess, I have a son in a wheelchair from a motorcycle accident when he was 12, and he goes to work every day, and he doesn't play the disability card. And I feel kind of guilty that I can still walk. So why would I?
Can you perform your job?
Yes, okay. I can, but the medications have to be increased.
Yeah, got it. So number one, it's questionable whether you could get Social Security disability. I don't know the answer to that.
You probably could, considering all the cases of disability that the
But I've seen people denied. I'm not a disability attorney, obviously, and I wouldn't use a disability attorney the first time out.
I think the question from a financial standpoint, if you went on disability today, if your concern is that disability check will be lower at retirement age, it will not. So it won't be reduced from where it starts today.
Okay. I would assume that what the law office was telling me, then this is what they specialize in, is since I've already been deemed by a physician legally permanently disabled, there shouldn't be an issue with receiving the benefits, but I was just concerned if I go out now, how that may affect me if I transition over from like SSDI to Social Security.
It won't. It will not.
You don't have to worry about that.
And how much would your benefit be now a month if you went on Social Security?
I believe the net would be $26.50.
Yeah. So I would go along with the attorney there. If you cannot perform your job and you feel that you need to go on permanent disability, then I would interact with that law.
I wouldn't. If this is what really needs to happen, I would not worry about what might happen at age 67 with Social Security. First of all, you don't have to worry because it's not going to change unless legislation causes some changes, but it's not. There's nothing in the books that would make it change today.
But the risk is that you go on short-term disability without actually qualifying for Social Security disability.
Sure.
That's the risk. Obviously,
the law office has kind of reviewed the facts already.
Yeah, correct. That's why I said it. I'd leave it to them.
But I was listening to a show you had last week, and you had made some comment, and I may have taken it out of context, but to get on, I thought you stated to get on Social Security as soon as possible, and you were talking about Social Security actually running out of money.
Correct. But that wouldn't necessarily apply to you. So what we were talking about is that the less, because of Social Security running out of money, when they tax benefits, they tax Social Security, they tax the people that actually have other income. So the history of Social Security shows that if they're going to reduce benefits, they're going to reduce benefits to people that actually don't need it, which are people with high incomes or high net worths. So our logic being is that if you think Social Security is going to run out of money and you don't need money, then you're probably better off taking it.
You need it. I would not worry about.
Yeah, you need the money, right? I assume that there's not other forms of income coming into the household. Is that correct?
Well, yes. My wife, thank God, has a very nice job. And so that helps. And then obviously I've been in a savings plan for about 25 years.
Perfect.
Yeah. If you need to, if you're like, I shouldn't be working, this is bad for my health. This is bad for the people around me.
Then
go on disability.
Yes.
No question.
And if the law firm is going to help you and you feel that it's worth paying for it, then pay for it. All righty.
Sure.
All right. Appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you. Good luck to you, Chris, and going forward. Boy, that's interesting. Two disabilities in a row. This program today. Right, let's head back to the calls. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Brett. Brett, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, just a quick question. I know you guys have gotten a little bit into pensions, and my situation is I'm with a private company, but it's like a utility, so it's kind of like a PG&E, and they have a pension system, but every time I've gone to the union meetings, all the shop stewards say, well, they're going to go after our pension. They're going to go after our pension. And after 5 years, you're considered vested. So if you're not like actually paying into a pension system and it's considered a benefit, can they just pull it out from under you? Is that possible?
Well, kind of. So what they can do is they can change.
You are clearly vested for some benefit, really at age 65. It could be structured differently, but most pensions, to qualify for a full pension, there's other requirements besides
like
5 years,
age and years of service, right? So what you are is you're vested, which means that they can't change anything. Well, they can't take anything away from you. You're vested in that. But they can change the formula going forward. They can get rid of it completely and say, hey, Brett, this is what you earned. You can take it as a lump sum and roll it into an IRA, or you can defer that pension, which is called a deferred vested pension, to some future date, be it 60, 65. Or they can say, we're going to lower your pension benefits at the rate you accumulate going forward. So public utilities, government, and utilities in general, be it electrical utility or old line what they call the regional belt operating companies. At one point in time, they were the regional belt operating companies. Now, most of them are back under AT&T. They have kept those benefits for non-salaried employees pretty constant. It's kind of amazing that they've been able to do that. So you're the shop stewards, or you say the union officials keep talking about it. There's precedent that would lead you to believe that it could happen, because it's happened in a number of industries, not so much in yours. But there's the reality is they can't do much other than negotiate the negotiating table for it. You as an individual can vote yay or nay on the union leaders, but it comes down to their ability to negotiate for your pensions.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, and I want to, because the contract's up in about 4 or 5 years, and I'd like to be a shop steward so I could be there at the negotiating table and try to make something happen to where the guys who are already there can keep their pension, and maybe the new hires who come in maybe won't get it. I don't know.
We have seen that in government. Especially yes. In municipalities where there's
And another private company as well.
They call them two-tiered. So there's a tier for people that have hired by a certain date, and a second tier for those people after hired by a certain date. But it is conceivable that they will change that. Absolutely.
Okay.
How old are you?
I'm 37, but I've only been working for the company for about 4 years.
As far as planning for your own retirement,
pretend it's not there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what I do, and I contribute a lot to my 401k. And I mean, I don't own a house. I don't got no kids. I don't, you know, no wife. So everything I make, I can save. So I consider myself pretty lucky.
And if you become a shop steward, then you want to do some research on pension law and how it has affected other industries. So appreciate the call.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, guys. Have a nice
day. All right, wish you
well.
And it's, you know, the thing, the pensions are, I was talking to a woman who, their firm specializes in market research for the financial services industry, right? So they have focus groups. They'll do focus groups of various people to try to figure out, you know, what they're thinking about, whatever. She said they've got to the point where they, for retirees, they'll have two different focus groups, one for pensioners and one for those that do not have pension, because the pension envy is so great for those that worked for a company for 35 or 40 years that don't have a pension, that there's some animosity in the room, and they find that the dialogue is not as good on the focus groups.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. Particularly if someone's next to you and they've got a government pension, a big government pension, and you don't have one. I mean, all power to people with pension. Part of our job as financial advisors is to help people maximize their pensions.
So absolutely.
We've helped a lot of state employees buy additional years of service when that was still available. We've helped people try to figure out their options at retirement.
I actually just helped a lady a few weeks ago that she had a deferred vested pension. She left the company. They came to her, and they offered her a lump sum.
And tried to figure out if that made sense or
and
not.
And for her, it actually made sense to keep it in the pension plan.
Oftentimes it does, particularly the older you are. But also, at retirement time, if you have a pension, you've got a lot of options.
Sometimes you have a joint survivor, a full joint survivor, you have a lump sum, or you can take a life-only pension. There's a lot of decisions
You
there.
Really want to make sure you talk to a firm that can help you to navigate what those options are. One of the things that we do with our clients, not a big pitch for myself, but look, it's an irrevocable decision. Oftentimes it's the largest financial decision you'll ever make. Which options do you take at retirement? And it really should be considered with everything else in your financial
including
world.
Including your health and your spouse's health.
Before we finish up our program, I want to let folks know, as back by popular demand, we have our 7 Personal Decision Point Retirement Workshops. If you are within a few years of retirement or recently retired, we strongly encourage you to attend one of these events. They've been highly successful as far as people attending them over the years. And we're in the Sacramento region the week of October 16th, 4 different events around the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And we are in Colorado the same week, October 16th, 17th, 18th, and 20th. So for more information on these and to register, simply go to HansonMcLean.com. HansonMcLean.com. You'll get all the relevant information. There's no charge to attend. I think you'll find it informative, as other people certainly do. So we hope to see you there. We are out of time. Make sure you join us each week or listen to our podcast, HansonMcLean.com, to get the podcast. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.